Pliny's traveling apothecary visits the Bleecker Street Clinic. Some reported products of women's bodies should be added to the class of marvels. Pliny, Natural History, Volume 8. There is no limit to a woman's power. Her menstrual fluid, exposed to lightning, keeps storms at bay, and the mysterious and awful power of her blood may cause irremediable harm. If, while menstruating, she walks naked through a cornfield, caterpillars, worms, beetles, and vermin will fall to the ground. Care must be taken that she does not walk at sunrise, with her hair disheveled and her girdle loose, for then the crop dries up and the bees flee their hives with her touch. She blunts the edges of razors, blackens the linen, causes mares in foal to miscarry if her wily hands pet them in their sweat. Not even fire can overcome the power of her blood. Beaver oil, taken in honey wine, will nourish her menstruation, but if a pregnant woman steps over some that is spilled on the floor, she will likely miscarry. The avoidance of miscarriage, Pliny tells us, is guaranteed if tied around a woman's neck is a pouch of gazelle leather, stuffed with the white flesh from a hyena's breast, seven hyena hairs, and the genital organ of a stag. If only the receptionist behind the iron bars at Planned Parenthood would pass these pouches out, along with the Medi-Cal forms and the neon condoms in a little brown bag. How reassuring in those long days during the first trimester, when every cramp has you traipsing to the bathroom in terror if the gonads of a stag ring around your neck. Such time one could devote to making booties and onesies. And in the event of the misfortune of a miscarriage or a failure to conceive, or if you were to give birth and then become postpartumly hysterical, the first line of defense would be the fat of a seal, melted in the fire and inserted into the nostrils. Lacking such access to the fat of a seal, lint smeared with dolphin's fat and set alight can tame your grim suffering. As a young mother, terrorized by her three young charges, I ran some laundry on high and fired up a dolphin, but the whole enterprise proved more exhausting than a Xanax and a glass of port. Today, I am watching a 16-year-old girl wrestle her 2-year-old son to the floor as he tried to take his third Dixie cup from the dispenser. Her round belly, surely the form of sorcery Pliny mentions when he warns of the extraordinary power of a pregnant woman who clasps her hands around her knees. Does she not know that the little tent she has made of her fingers while waiting for her prenatal exam is a terrible obstacle to councils of war and transactions of business? I thought of telling her, but decided she likely has other worries. Wishing that 5 months ago she had not taken in food the eye of a hyena mixed with licorice and dill, which guaranteed contraception within 6 days, a fate that left her weeping on the toilet when the cheap dipstick turned pink. I imagine her lying on her back as he entered her, hiccuping from that terrific repast that ensured her place in our society as a sorceress. At least she might rest assured, thinking that, months later, sitting in this office, her knock-kneed, knocked-up self could be influencing the men upstairs who were trying to decide whether to invade Troy or play another round of darts. Surely she was more consumed with the knowledge that sexual intercourse cures pain in the loins dullness of the vision, unsoundness of mind, and melancholia than she was with the concern that her mere presence here in a chair crossing and uncrossing her nervous knees could stop Halliburton in his tracks. In 4 months, she will prove what Pliny discloses in the 8th volume dictated from the baths to his royal chronicler, a woman's milk is the sweetest and most delicate of all. For if she gives birth to a boy, mere drops of her product will cure rheumatic fever, gout, afflictions of the ears, the sting of a toad's juice squirted in the eye, fluxes of the eyes, the uterus, and the bowels. If she bears a girl, her milk stands small chance of curing spots on the face. No doubt, then, she will be all the rage among her barren and acneed friends. She wobbles slightly, getting out of the orange plastic chair, still a starling, fallen from one tufted nest into the sly yarn of another, yoking her arms to chicks who will cheep and drain and torment. Perhaps there is solace in the fact she will no doubt go on to prove her extraordinary powers as a woman, when one apocryphal day she will awaken at sunrise to walk through the cornfields, bare and bleeding, impervious to the hail and the rain and the wind, choking the mice and the crops behind her.